by you.
Great. We'll just wait for a few minutes and see if others join us.
Okay.
Hello? Whoever that is, it must be international, because it sure is breaking up.
Can't quite.
Hi, David. Okay,
we may need you to call back in. I think you're breaking up too much for us to hear you. Thanks. Peter?
Yes.
You want me to add John's name? You want me to type into the page, or you want to type?
I will let you type.
Okie dokie.
I'm not editing.
I'm editing, then.
Right. John, you're from First Star Systems, right?
Yes. Hello?
Hello?
Michael Gruninger here.
Pardon me?
Michael Gruninger.
Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Finally got to join a meeting. Yes, it is.
Yeah, well, for some reason, I was out of sync. You know, Friday at noon tends to be a lot of department meetings around here, so I ended up having to miss those. But this is always the reserve time, so.
Yes, it is. So it works. Did somebody else just join?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We still have you breaking up. I'm sorry. Thank you for dialing back in. But we just...
There's always a problem when you're on the
phone. Can you hear him better than I?
It's barely. I mean, I believe that's Mike Dean. Mike.
Is it Mike?
If you can hear us well, then maybe you keep yourself mute. And only unmute when you speak. That's one way to do it.
Okay. So maybe if we just put you on mute then.
I believe he has put himself on mute.
Okay, good.
Probably.
Michael, how do I spell your last name?
Oh, me? G-R-U. G-R-U. N-I-N-G-E-R.
G-R-U.
N-I-N-G-E-R.
G-E-R. Okay, great.
And it's Michael Bennett here as well.
Oh, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
I'm so glad you could join us.
Thanks.
This is Gary Berkeras also.
Hi, Gary. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, this is Ken Matlowski.
Hi, Ken.
Unfortunately, I can't stay very long.
Okay, well, we'll try to make this as valuable as we can. Hello, someone else joined?
Yeah, Bruce Parkmeyer just came on board.
Hey, Bruce.
Hello.
How are you doing?
All right. Who's on?
Someone else just joined?
Hi, Catherine. This is Todd.
Hi, Todd. I was afraid you might not be able to make it. I'm so glad you could.
I'll only be able to stay in about a half an hour or 45 minutes, unfortunately.
Okay, so we'll bring your part up first. Okay?
Okay. I was able to upload an image last night.
I did see an uploaded image this morning, so it looks very positive.
I misread Peter's instructions.
Gary, how do I spell your last name?
Bergcross is BERG-CROSS. And I'm only going to be able to be on for about 20, 25 minutes. I have a call at 2 o'clock also.
Okay.
Hi, Gary.
Hello.
And Ken, is your McCloskey spelled with a K?
Ken McCloskey?
Mm-hmm.
B-A-C-L-A-W-S-K-I.
Okay. So let's go ahead and get started with the agenda since we've got some folks that are going to have to leave. And it looks like I've got an editing conflict, so I'm going to get out of the page and let whoever else wants to edit get in there and edit. After this roll call, the first thing I wanted to talk about was just basic pluses and minuses of using the OOR use cases for each of you as attendees. And what I'd like to do is just each of you kind of mention exactly what you saw as the benefits or the detractions for using use cases for the OOR. And for those of you that are leaving early, let's start with you guys first. Todd, do you want to start?
Okay. If the goal is OOR to have something that's useful for people for long periods of time, then having a completely well-documented architecture is going to be crucial. And starting with use cases is a nice way to start. That's my view.
Okay. And I believe, Michael, were you going to have to leave early?
Nope. I'm here for the whole meeting.
Okay. What about Michael Bennett? John?
Sorry,
okay.
I muted myself.
That's okay. You want to talk a little bit about the pluses and minuses for use cases, Michael Bennett, and as you see them?
I'm just kind of listening in to get a handle on what that's about, but yeah, I'm happy to chip in, definitely.
Because I know that on you demonstrated your financial standards,
mm-hmm.
correct?
That's right. Yep.
And do you already have use cases for those? For using
yeah,
in oncology?
Kind of, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's quite a simple use case. But yeah, I'm happy to talk about that and the different things that can be done with it. There's quite a few conversations going on about that among our users. So yeah, definitely.
Okay. Well, we would like to kind of share with you what we see, you know, fits into that simple use case as well and maybe add to that.
Yeah.
And Michael Grunger, did you have a particular use for the use cases, a particular ontology you wanted to connect into the OOR?
Well, so our objective, say up in Toronto, or the selfish part of our collaboration, is we are kind of already, we had already kind of started off a project we were calling Calore, a common logic ontology repository. And it is, so far it's just a set of hyperlinked web pages, but we want to migrate that over into the OOR. And so our use cases kind of revolve around, again, that migration from this hyperlinked set of common logic ontologies into the OOR ontology repository.
Well, that would be wonderful.
And then, so then, along with that, kind of some of the supporting services, so syntactic checking, perhaps links to consistency checking with theorem provers, and other kinds of either semi-automated metadata markup that could be done, or at least the facility for other users to go in and add the metadata themselves. So there'd be users who would be contributing ontologies to repository, but then also capabilities for users to add metadata comments to the ontologies that different people have posted. And also, and another capability that we wanted was because the ontologies in the repository, from our perspective, say we're going to be putting up common logic ontologies, since there aren't any currently right now native common logic reasoners, either theorem provers or consistency checkers, there would be some facility for doing translation from common logic into the various notations the fear approvers that are being currently used.
Oh, great.
So we're pulling all that stuff together, and hopefully, say by the end of next week, we'll be able to post them up on the wiki.
That'll be super. Gary, did you say you had to leave early?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about your pluses and minuses and what you want to see out of this.
Yeah. So one of the primary purposes I would go to an OR is because I'm starting in an area where I want to see what exists, but probably don't expect to find the exact ontology that I want. So I want to be able to sort of maybe partially assemble things out of pieces that are there. I know you have a use case with mapping, but so it's a little bit more complicated than just basically mapping. It's sort of whether or not the OOR would also support some sort of assembly of pieces there, so you could see what it's essentially what you can get there.
Okay,
okay.
Gary, this is Todd.
Yes.
Would that be a variation or an extension of discovery?
Well, discovery is part of it, but, you know, so I want to discover, but I also want to sort of see how things come together. Now, it could be that I'll suck everything out into my own tool there, but
right. But
since these things are in the repository, so I first see them there, so the question I had was whether or not the group would consider some assembly area or something of that nature to see how things fit together besides just the mapping.
Right. Well,
are you thinking from architecture perspective or the development perspective?
I'm thinking at first from an architecture perspective.
Well, keep in mind that one thing I'd like to get out first is what are the core functionalities. Now, what you're suggesting and some of the points Michael suggested would be additions to the core functionality.
I agree. It's not the first thing out of the box, but that just expresses my sort of my interest, where I'm coming from.
Right. So that your use cases you're suggesting and some of Michael's would extend some of those primary use cases. Actually, I think I missed
you. You have a whole thing called Ontology Designer, right? And
but
you're allowing people to not only load an ontology in, but to sort of update that particular ontology. So,
right.
And then you can map the ontology. And then you can. I'm just adding something to the ontology design section that you have, which is beyond just searching out something, uploading one, updating it, and mapping to
right.
a little bit more of a design.
Well, Gary,
activity.
Could you either create the use case or more importantly the activity diagram for that ontology designer case?
Well, let me think about it. I see you have some. You have two diagrams or so, or one maybe.
Well, you can do it in text. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So, Michael Gruninger here. Just a comment on what Gary just said. I think this also raises kind of an issue of the difference between a repository that has a more of an archival standard flavor, right? So this is a kind of a repository where people will be using as a resource versus one that's more dynamic, almost like a workspace, where, if in the repository we want to have, say, high-quality ontologies, that are consistent, et cetera, In a more of a workspace approach, you shouldn't be afraid to throw in inconsistent, incomplete, all kinds of pieces because, as Gary is saying, if you're the ontology designer, you want to have the ability to kind of take a little bit from here and add it to that and see what it looks like and then, maybe leave that off to the side while you think of another idea. And so you have a lot of, partial drafts of ontologies, if you will. And so that, I'm not sure how that would be related to the more, higher quality part
Well, that gets back to the notion of the core functionality and these additional
mm-hmm.
add-ons that people will want and need at some point.
Okay.
And the first thing I'd like to get through is the core functionality and then make sure that core functionality can support some of these additions that people will want and need.
Right.
So
okay.
Let me quickly finish going through the list of folks on the line and make sure everybody gets their chance to say what they want out of this. Ken McCloskey, can you speak next?
Oh, sure. We're already starting to use the OR sandbox, and a number of issues are coming up, particularly right now in terms of scale up. The you know, the ontologies that we're going to be dealing with range from one that we have right now, which is about 20 gigabytes, to ones that we're projecting pretty soon that will be about half a terabyte. And so, as you might imagine, these will put a real strain on any system. And so there has to be the ability to deal with such enormous ontologies.
How many gigabytes, you said?
Huh?
How many gigabytes?
Well, yeah, the one I'm working with right now is just 20 gigabytes, but we're projecting 500.
Wow.
And that's the ontology. There's data associated with it also, which is much bigger. Now, the other thing is that these ontologies, while they're, I can't say that there's, you know, people are working on them. I mean, more information comes in all the time. But not in the sense that somebody is editing existing material necessarily, but, you know, new information is just, you know, continually coming in. I think in this particular case, the data comes in daily. So there is an issue of version control and also perhaps something like configuration management. Because these ontologies, in case you're wondering, the ontology is a taxonomy in the biology domain. And they're continually finding new relationships among the various species. And
that's actually one of the real advantages too, Ken, of us doing this activity. So I'm glad you mentioned that. We can kind of share best practices in configuration management for large ontologies. That'll be great.
So there's this use case concerning configuration management and versions. That's a fairly complex use case that we need to deal with.
Is your group flushing that out, Ken?
Well,
I guess we're working on, yeah.
I like to connect the old thread, Ken. If I may comment, Katie?
Sure, go ahead, Robbie. It's a good time.
There are many things. Some of us many of us will have to do parts of these, but the concept of a test environment, a tested or proven environment, and a development environment, these are very standard in software architecture and development practices. We have to follow these. And in addition, we have to take decisions on whether we are going to take on dynamic updation of data in these repositories. So it's a very complex question, but we started with some use cases. And if you remember, Todd, we summarized them from Farooq Nazmi and others in OOR Architecture Forum. We need one more attempt at graphical depiction of those use cases.
Yeah, and Todd's made some progress on that. We'll get to that next. I just want to make sure we cover everybody's uses before we go forward. Bruce Barkmeyer, can you speak next?
Yes. I'm trying to sort out exactly what we're trying to accomplish here. I have some use cases, and I don't know whether I should post them to one or the other of the Open Ontology Repository _ use cases, or just the use cases one. And I was looking around through this stuff, and I thought that I had posted some before. Maybe I only sent an email, but I can't find what I posted before in terms of use cases. I
tried to put all of the links I could find in the down at the bottom, but if you find that later, let's add it in.
Okay, I recollect putting something in, but I can't find it. But I very much agree with using use cases as a way to drive your thinking in terms of architectures and saying what you're going to try to do. Because if you don't have use cases that are not only important but have a business purpose of creating the money to pursue it, then so I think it all, I think it basically hinges on use cases. Now, I have some that I could, that are very loose use cases that come out of the most recent edition of 1179 that I could post, and they may be slightly beyond the scope that people are thinking on, but I think that they at least contribute to the discussion. I like the material that I find there on the links that you have. And I could also post a link, if not a copy of stuff that out of the XMDR, but we have use cases that are written up in a little bit more detail. But
we would really, really appreciate that, Bruce. And you could put it under use cases if you wish, under candidate use cases.
Yes,
or
Peter,
you could create a whole new page if you wish. Peter, what do you think?
Yes, a comment. With reference to Bruce's question, the page that says use cases was sort of started way back in 2003 when we had less things to do. So now we should all sort of prefix the use cases with the particular project. So I think ontology, or our use the open ontology repository underscore use cases would be the right place.
Use cases, the first thing says use cases for the first UBL-ontology.
Exactly, yes. That was from the UBL ontology way back when, I mean, back in 2003 when the group was still, I think, a UBL spin-off at that time. So ignore that one.
I was reluctant to post to that one.
But on the open ontology repository underscore use cases, if you scroll down to the very bottom, there your input is actually there. Someone had put it in there. Either it was yourself or maybe
I think
Goodyear.
I might have done that.
Right.
Peter, last year I was updating that page often, so I might have done that.
Now I can see. Bruce, actually, you did post that back in on July 25th, 2008, revision 21.
And has it disappeared from that page?
No, it hasn't. It's still there.
It's
the last item on the page.
There it is. Okay,
yeah, keep
good.
Scrolling.
You actually
put it in there yourself. July 25th, 2008.
Thank you for finding it. I remembered doing it, and I was wondering whether I just was remembering what I didn't do. But I will go in and add one more, which is the stuff out of 1179, and I think it at least contributes to the discussion.
Wonderful, Bruce.
Thanks, Bruce.
That would be great.
Hey, Bruce?
Next person, John Bottoms.
Uh-huh. Before you go, Bruce, if it's possible, some of the use cases that were written up there were using the text format from Wikipedia. If it's not too much effort, if you could follow that, if it's adequate, it'd make it easier to incorporate them all together at some point.
Okay, text format.
If you have images, that's fine too.
And is there, and when you say text format, is as in some character font?
Some what? I'm sorry?
Some character font?
No. In terms of the organization, for instance, let me go to that page real fast. If you go to Wikipedia and look up use case, there's some little structure that they have there. Preconditions and main course. Oh, here, goal, actors, preconditions, triggers, basic course, alternative courses, post-season.
Yes, I haven't got that level,
and
there would be considerable work to do that.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I could post kind of a list of things quickly to do a proper set of use cases. It will take a lot more work.
Even if we have that initial list, that we can get some other people to do some of that work, like me.
Yeah, hopefully.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Todd, Peter Yim here. I mean, it would be great if you make a post to OOR forum and sort of make that as a template and the proper references, so that in the future someone comes in and then we could always refer them back to your post.
Well, I've got the floor for a second. Let me say that 1179 Part 3 is out for review, and I'm wondering whether I should just post it to the OOR forum, a link to it or something, and that people make comments on it, or...
Love that.
Okay, it's out for ballot. Shall I just post it to the OOR forum or to this group, or what?
My suggestion, Bruce, depending on how wide a community you want to address, the OOR team is about maybe 40, 50 people on the list. The Ontolog forum list is about maybe 600, 700 people. So, your call. I mean, I assume you're a member of Ontolog Forum as well.
Yeah, I'm on both of them.
So, take your pick. I mean, with a thing like XMDR, I think you posting to Ontolog Forum probably would be the type of audience you're looking for.
Okay, good. Thanks.
And any comments from you on relationship of metadata registries and metadata related these XMDR efforts to repository, ontology repository?
Yes, I hope the little things that I put in will help that, because I believe that there's a strong connection possible between these ontology repositories, or ontology specifically, and metadata.
And that connection, if we can explicitly state, it would help our readers.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Now, John, what were you looking for out of this group?
Well, we're still kind of early phases of looking at OOR, so I think we're not ready to comment on that yet.
Okay. That's fine. You can kind of sit in the background as much as you want.
Okay, thank you.
Todd, I know you got to leave soon. Can we go to your page and actually see what you've posted there? And could you talk us through that? This is the link at the bottom on ontology.
The OOR
use cases.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and Catherine, maybe on the pages for OOR, we should remove that other link to just says that says just use cases to avoid confusion.
Okay, I'll do that right now.
Can I edit this page while we're talking, or should I wait till...
I'll get out of there, and then you can give me just a second, and you can edit, because I'll be gone.
This is Gary. I have to drop off now. I may be able to get on in a half hour or 45 minutes.
Okay, we'll probably be gone by then, but Gary, thank you for joining so much, and we'll keep you abreast.
Next time. Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Good. Is Todd talking now?
Yeah. If you go to the Open Ontology Repository _use cases page, I posted a simple diagram there.
Yeah, wonderful. That's what I wanted. Wonderful.
Now, again, these are the sort of the primary use cases, and as has been pointed out, for instance, the bottom one where it says load ontology, add metadata. That particular use case needs to be broken down even further. And as we've heard, there's lots of issues about the information has to be put there in terms of provenance, in terms of configuration management. And in, for instance, as Michael pointed out, I think it was Michael, that I don't have the use case here for configuration management, which probably needs
good.
To be put there. And that's one of the primary ones. So that was an oversight on my part.
A few comments for you, Todd, whenever you think.
I'm ready.
And I saw that you had a place for comments, so I just added comments on the page, and that I thought was really nice.
Yes. The additional comments are related to distributed and federated nature of this boundary, is the first comment. OOR boundary, somehow if you could kindly graphically also indicate that we don't mean a single physical boundary, we mean distributed components, maybe linked to or owned by the overall OOR.
I will. I don't think it's necessary, but I think it would help to avoid any confusion, as you're suggesting might be the case. That is, just because it's a boundary, it doesn't imply necessarily a geographic boundary other physical types of boundaries.
And
okay,
also federation with others, like OBO or NCBO, or like Bruce was mentioning, the bio community.
That
so
is
the second thing I would say is like you said, add metadata. So if you could kindly also connect it somehow after we receive Bruce's comments on how we relate it to others. Elements that constitute ontology, such as metadata repositories, vocabularies, and things of that sort.
I'm not sure I understand, Robbie.
Suppose there's a metadata repository, as Bruce was mentioning.
What do you mean a separate metadata repository?
There is the XMDR and the metadata repositories work is standalone by themselves. And how do we connect them ontologically to our OOR? Or we don't connect them. That's the kind of decision you have to take.
Isn't that a different level of detail?
Yeah,
I mean, a metadata repository can be used to map out all different kinds of metadata, among which would be the metamodel for an ontology, the metamodel for a logical model, provenance, data quality metadata, and so on. So surely the metadata repository is just a tool for doing each of those things.
Those would be additional use cases. It's just my comment.
Well, bear in mind that the OOR can be used recursively, and the question is now in terms of use cases whether the use cases capture that possibility, if they do it all, if they do it properly.
Very good. Who was speaking just now?
That is Michael Bennett, wasn't it?
Yes, mm-hmm. That was good,
yes,
Mike.
It was.
That was a great comment.
Thanks.
So we can see on this page, Todd, the place for potential use cases. Is that where we want folks like Michael and to put their use cases and links to them?
Or if you just want to put in additional use cases as opposed to potential?
Yeah, I would say additional.
Okay.
It might get too busy otherwise.
Okay.
Additional views or additional levels of use cases.
Yeah, for instance,
under potential use cases, you've got a list of types of ontology, which I guess is a different thing.
And also, if you're going to put your name down there, for instance, I'm looking at the potential use cases right now. It says Biocaster ontology. How is that a use case?
Yeah, that's what Michael was just saying. They're really ontologies, so, they're not really use cases. So I'm going to go in and edit this page and change that too.
Okay.
As a title there.
No, I think the original post there was sort of a placeholder for various content providers to come in with their use cases. So those three, I think Biocaster, Wound Ontology, and the MMI Ontology Repository were three different. I think we at one point asked for content, asked for people who would volunteer their content, and then we said we would go out and get those ontology content providers to provide us with their use cases. So those were placeholders.
So they're potential sources of use cases.
Right.
Which is not indicated in the text here. So. Okay. The more the merrier.
We certainly think so.
Right.
We set up at the Ontology 2009 Summit several key challenges for our future. So I see this as a good place to link those use cases like those in Michael Bennett's area. You know, and in the common logic repository to what we've got in OOR. So this is exciting times. Feel free to go ahead and edit this page to your heart's content, one and all.
And I think some of the use cases that Michael and his team will generate are going to be can be made generic to support other languages, because some of those same capabilities that they may be thinking of specifically for common logic have to apply to OWL and flavors of OWL and GIF or whatever else you want to put in there.
And absolutely.
So when I joined the conference here this afternoon, Was it Mike who was speaking about the common logic?
Yes, yes, it
Mike
was
Mike Bennett. Mike Bennett.
Michael Gruninger.
No, Michael Gruninger.
Yeah. So, Mike, thank you. That I thought that was great. I got the last few parts of your sentence, but that was great.
Oh, thanks.
Hey, Todd, anything else?
No, I guess, I mean, the next step of having after having use cases is to write down the activity diagrams and then move on to sequence diagrams. And then hopefully the BioPortal people will look at this, and Ken's gang and Michael's student will look at this and see how they can integrate with that these notions into a correct the notions for what we're missing. And then continue on down that path. Because, again, if we want people to make use of this in an easy fashion and consistent fashion, then we really have to have the appropriate level of documentation. And, you know, if you go to TOGAF or MODAF or any framework for architecture, they lay out the sort of things that you need. And for the most part, those provide a very good foundation for building commonality. And to some extent, this is an analysis process also, since we're not sure exactly what we need.
Exactly. Okay. The next item on our agenda is really to talk about methods for how we manage quality of our use cases. Anyone have any ideas on this that they want to share with the team?
That's always a dicey issue. Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, it's Mike Bennett here. I just had a thought while you were talking earlier about configuration management and stuff, and that's something I'm fairly familiar with over the years. And I think one important point when looking at how things are updated and so on is that it would be worth formally identifying kinds of change which will have a knock-on impact on other things and kinds of change which won't. So within the change management system, you need to have some kind of analysis which results in some field or flag that says, you know, so for example, you can add terms to something or add some level of meaning without breaking things. But if you restructure, say, the parent or something, then it'll break things. So you need some concept of impact analysis and some way of flagging that up as part of a change tag.
Okay. Anyone else?
Well, in terms of the configuration management, I was hoping we could we actually get to build something, perhaps exploit the work that IHMC has done in policy management. They have an ontologically driven policy manager.
What manager?
A policy manager.
You'll put a link for that out there, won't you, Todd?
I will. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Well, hold on. I don't know how much of that material is public, but I will try and find out. And if it is public, I'll put the link there.
That'll be great.
One more thought here is: do you want to give such capability, such related, such and discovery related to ontology as an element in this high level use case?
Search and discovery?
Yeah, like inferencing, using these ontologies. Suppose you found an ontology, right?
Well,
now you want to do some querying.
Okay, well, that's another level of detail I have not included yet. So in particular, I put under view ontology, part of that is you have to find something to view, and part of the view, the finding process is the use of discovery and or search capabilities, how those search capabilities are facilitated or impeded or implemented, I don't think we'd address directly in use cases.
No, I just meant by view, I meant it's just a table or a file structure and you are viewing what is available. While find is a specific search for a particular type of ontology I'm looking by subject area. Having found that ontology and related ontologies, is there a way I could join them and do a combined search or some powerful referencing or inferencing?
Well, that was, I'm assuming.
Excuse me, can I just interrupt for a second? I have to leave.
Sure.
Okay.
Let me mention, I just taught a software engineering course, and one of the big parts of the course was use cases and use case analysis. So.
Oh, perfect. So you're our quality guru on use cases.
I tell you a lot about use cases, but I have to leave right now.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okie dokie. We'll let you type out as you will on our wiki and be very appreciative of all you share.
Okay.
Yes, Katie, I agree with you.
One of the things that anyone else have any ideas on methods for managing the quality of use cases?
Oh, quality of use cases or quality of ontologies?
Quality of use cases.
Use cases.
So, yeah, lots of...
Chef Katie?
I don't have that. It's just that...
I think at this point we're just going to have to go by sort of a vote process.
Yeah,
okay.
I think we'll filter by community consensus.
Yeah.
I think that sounds fine. And someone else?
I think there's one...
Okay.
Sorry. I think there's one thing worth noting which came up a few times at last week's summit, which was... being able to identify the provenance of classes and relationships and things in an ontology.
Yeah.
So you've got some kind of traceable reference to where things come from, and you know, particularly I think when we look at some of the common terms like accounting terms and so on, I think it's certainly going to be helpful to know which of those represent terms that have come out of standards bodies and so on, that, or communities of practice that have worked in those areas, rather than which of them are somebody who's got some bee in their bonnet about ontology and wants to ontologize the world. You know, I think it's always good to know which of these terms come from where.
That's part of the provenance issue of the ontology itself. And Denise Bedford had an interesting presentation, I guess, 2 years ago about that. And that was her very important item for her. And I do concur with that. That's an issue of ontology quality, and perhaps some of that can be... implemented as part of configuration management and policy management, that, you know, each of those fields in whatever language you're using has the appropriate provenance or has at least some provenance information. But I don't think we can have an automatic method to check each and every entry to see that sufficient documentation has been provided that would meet our quality standards.
I agree.
So we'd like to encourage that, certainly. And that's why, again, I'm pushing here that even in the development of our artifacts for the architecture, before we even go to coding, that we have that same level of provenance to the best possible extent we can actually do.
Within each ontology, however, you will have terms and vocabularies and metadata.
Yes.
That you can search their attributes on, and hopefully someday we'll integrate them to interoperate. So we can see two or three at a time.
I'm going to have to drop off now, Catherine.
Okay, Todd. Thanks for joining.
Thank you. Have fun, gang.
So
okay.
Thank you.
The
Kate.
Next item really on our agenda is really talking about how we can mash up with existing constructs in the community so we can have better collaboration. And around that topic, a specific idea I was thinking of has to do with configuration management of ontologies. I know that in at least one ontology that I could contribute, we have a strong, good example of how to do configuration management. The idea would be if we could find ways to share that effectively across the community through our use cases, so that we could somehow point to a piece, part of an ontology and reuse it. This is something I think that Gary Barkoff was talking about before, so that the reusability of things that work well could help everyone across the community. So I'd like to find a way that in our use cases we could, you know, award, if you will, possible reusable modules with some kind of a quality award or usability award or something like that. Has anybody ever seen anything like that in an ontology community?
You mean
no.
Things like mashup? Is that what you are referring to? Or?
Mm-hmm, right. Have you, Michael?
I have seen some ontology publications for reuse of parts of the ontologies due to the similarity in context or concept, but not in any other way.
Now, I've seen them in the ontologies themselves, but not in the use cases. where they'd be denoted.
Yeah, Peter Yim here. Since Mike Dean is on mute and most of the people in the meeting actually are not on the chat room, in the chat room, I'll read out his comment.
Great.
And he said, I think work on use cases will be very helpful, and he said he is particularly interested in use cases for federation. So, I mean, that actually folds into your point about sort of collaboration,
well.
Because if we have a specific use case for federation, that would help tremendously.
Mike, you want me to attempt that?
Sorry?
I was wondering if I could attempt that. Because we did say something in our comments. If you read these comments in the old link, use cases link, you see in Farooq's use case diagram and my comments on this, I'm addressing that, but I have never bothered to draw it myself. But would Mike like me to do that?
He said that would be great. Ravi.
Oh, really?
Ravi, if you go into the chat room, you see his comments.
I will. Yeah, I will try to do that.
Yeah.
Somehow
he's
my
still typing.
System was preventing me earlier. Yeah, I see that now.
That'll be great.
Oh, thank you, Mike. I will do that. Thank you, Kate.
Mm-hmm.
I will give myself 15-20 days before I can send you something.
Okie dokie. Someone else trying to...
Yeah. Mike Bennett here. I think you asked me just now, and I sort of had the answer in my head and I've lost it. But I think this is a very important area because take an example of the stuff we've been doing in the financial industry ontology. This, what you're discussing, really describes the problem we had in being able to identify terms that are suitable to reuse. We kind of had to create holding patterns for most of them, except the XBRL stuff, and even that was really just extracted from the XML schema. But I think what's useful would be to have some kind of framework or some way of first identifying where something comes from, as we talked about before, what the concept is. And one thing that I think would help in this is being able to identify the context in which something is defined. Now, if you use an overall structure, I know this maybe is beyond what we can do with this, but if, say, for example, a number of ontologies follow the structure whereby they have the concept of a context within them, so you've got not only independent things and relative things, but the actual context in which those occur, if you have that within an ontology, then one can identify within a given piece of structure in, say, a legal ontology or a geographical ontology or something, what is the context in which something's defined, which therefore makes it a lot more reusable than when you're just picking up an owl file where everything is a thing and you don't quite know, so pizza base is a thing, but where's the context? It says it's to do with food, So I don't know what the answer is, but some level of common sophistication across the reusable structures within ontologies would allow them to be reused far more than when somebody very technical has just learned OWL and done the data model into OWL and stuck it up somewhere.
Thank you, Michael. Anyone else on this topic? Okay, the last topic on the agenda is really talking about a possible methodology for using the IETF RFC consensus process. Does anybody on the line not understand what we're talking about when we talk about this kind of process? I can give a quick summary.
Let me see whether I understand or not.
Do you understand the IETF RFC process?
Well,
please go ahead anyway, Kate.
I lost my thing because I went to chat board, so I need to go back to your...
You have to have two windows open, Ravi.
Yeah. No,
what happens is that instead of a standards process like we were talking about in the Ontology Summit last at NIST, what happens in the IETF is it's more of an anarchy-based process. So anyone can contribute their requests for comment, and anyone can comment on those requests for comments. It's not really very structured around in the same way that standards are. It's kind of an anti-standard, if you will. But they can, in a given RFC, also quote a standard that they want to use. So as we see things grow, this may be something that is an appropriate methodology to consider. Right now, where we don't have much in the repository, it seems a little unnecessary to worry about this. But as things grow and we want to be sure that we have quality in both our ontologies and in our use cases, we may, and we also have students who are willing to contribute, we may want to adopt a consensus process similar to IETF. Okay?
Comment?
Anybody have any ideas?
I have a comment.
I mean, I would welcome the concept of open forum, not too restrictive kind of RFC request for comment process. Once we then get into some adopted standard for our repository, then we need to restrict release by release the addition of other standards or widening the scope and things of that sort, so that implementation doesn't get a scope creep. But for commenting and for ideas and brainstorming, I would support the open kind of request for comment process.
Yeah.
Are you also for it? Pardon me?
I agree with you, Ravi. I think one of the things that, you know, say, I guess taking my own use case as an example, I'm sure it's the same with building services and so on, where you've got, you're building ontology and you want to be able to reuse a lot of known and stable terms, you want to know that those correspond with what come out of a community of people that work in that area and know that stuff, so you want to know that your legal terms come from lawyers. So I think some way of, you know, if stuff is in the repository that is traceable back to some well-defined, stable standard, then I agree we shouldn't allow that to be destabilized. And where the RFC process is more useful, as you say, Ravi, is in getting input and comments and maybe formatting and maybe the more internal technical aspects of the thing rather than the content.
This is John Bottoms. It seems to me that the RFC process really is a two-step process, and the full technical details are not necessarily captured in the RFCs. They quite often are hashed out at the bake-offs. And you'll find RFCs that are intentionally obfuscating. So in terms of openness, I agree that I like the open architecture, but quite often they're not definitively enough technically to implement.
Well, let us look at the ontolog forum happenings of comments. There's a varied list of subjects on which people are commenting and interacting. And we have no window, and Peter will confirm that, we have no window to know how that knowledge is actually being used by people, either in their open or closed products, or into their thinking or research, or new ontologies coming out. So it's just open knowledge contribution.
Yeah, I want to comment on that. And a lot of people don't draw the distinction between ontolog forum, which is a community of practice, and if I reduce that to sort of layman terms, it's only supposed to be a good water cooler conversation.
Right.
Versus a project like OOR or versus a project like ISO 11179 version 3 standards development. I mean, so those are, I mean, you can look at the ontolog forum conversation as a sort of upstream process that leads to more structured projects like OOR. So, even people very close to the project. I remember, like, Todd Schneider, when he was doing the requirements panel, would say this is the Ontolog OOR project. This actually is not the Ontolog OOR project. OOR initiative is an initiative on its own. It just happens that at this early stage, it found a sort of incubator or funds some people hosting that work with the infrastructure in the Ontolog collaborative work environment. Actually, Ontolog hosts more than just OOR. It hosts like DSP. It's hosting or incubating the upcoming International Association for Ontologies and its applications, the IAOA thing, which maybe eventually grows into the IEEE of ontologies, but
very good. Good comment.
So please note and note this thing.
Katie, from your list of this, I thought that we could use that as a top level process where we have these ideas and these use cases, and we put them out for open comments through a RFC consensus process to different communities, including Ontolog Forum, and see what people have to add to that. Having received a lot of comments, then we go back to our drawing board and say, this kind of use case set makes sense. And it would help you also do the quality of use case filter and also design.
I'm kind of wondering, why do we need a formal process? The RFC is one process. There's you know, W3C, there's ISO, there's a whole lot of different processes. What are we trying to achieve? What I just heard the last comment say is, you know, we need to put it out, get people to comment on it, get it back, and accommodate those comments. That you can do that without specifying that you have a particular process. What I'm worried about is that when you choose a process, then you choose a set of directives, and then you start arguing about procedure.
No, I didn't mean that. I meant just a little open forum communities exposure for wider audience to comment, like you mentioned, somebody mentioned about legal perspective of use of a term, etc., so that once we get, and this is a little bit more technical area, like OOR repository is more technically defined target subject area, as Peter mentioned. So we just expose a bit to wider community and bring back the value of those comments into our design.
I like that very much. I question the need for adopting a formal set of procedures.
No, I wasn't insisting on that.
Could I just clarify? It could almost be two conversations. RSCs for changes to content or material that's in there or whatever versus RFCs for changes to the repository structure itself, or is in fact that the only thing that's in the scope of what we're talking about anyway?
Well, what happens in the IETF forum is that each of the areas that have to do with your discussion, which is ontology, open ontology repository in this case, ends up having their own area within the RFC framework. So it could be actually both as it develops. Like I said at the beginning, right now it seems a little irrational to talk about because we don't have that much in the repository. But if this thing grows, and particularly if we want to involve student participation, we may want to have some kinds of structures for allowing this to have comments.
Right. I just wanted to clarify that because some of the comments I made would apply to one aspect of the answer to that question but not to the other. So
right.
To talk about content, what I've said about RFCs in terms of content is very different to what I would say about use of RFCs in terms of developing the use cases and the repository itself and so on. I think one shouldn't expect the same answer to both of those questions.
Could I point out, too, that RFCs all have to run on the same network, and the common element there is the IP protocol. With ontologies, they could vary quite a bit, and I'm certainly open to open comments, but it would be nice if we had some certainty about getting to a deterministic outcome. Maybe one way to do that would be to have a project that addresses interoperability.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Speaking of interoperability as a project, you know, that was the theme of the summit, as it is every year, is really looking at ways we can improve interoperability. Any ideas on how these use cases could emphasize interoperability improvements?
Yes.
Well,
from those on the call?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sounds like it has to include determinism at some point.
Right.
I can comment. After your comments, I will comment.
Okay. Thanks, Robbie. I'll be very quick.
No.
I think one of the real challenges of interoperability, and I don't think there's necessarily any easy answers to this, is some kind of common framework or some common development method, or call it what you will, that ensures that the way in which you see a task and its relationship, even if it's in a different language, say between AL and ODM and so on, that the nature of what's in there, there's some kind of common way that that's done. And that's not a trivial thing, and it may not be possible, but that's one thing to look at, I think.
That's good. Any other comments?
Yeah, the one thing was the sentence adopted by Mike Gruninger in 2009 summit, which I guess I had pushed a little harder and finally got in there, is that was relating to standards interoperability. And it will also map into what we are trying to do. Suppose we have ontologies that are written in different, not only languages and notations, but also have different import-export of information interfaces, which again tie to standards, of course. But in such cases, we could also host facilities that would allow them to interoperate with each other, like take from one ontology and export into another, or at least join them in a data table joined sense and do queries on joined ontologies. So this is my comment, and we could even visually depict that as another use case if we had the bandwidth and the time to do so.
Okay.
John again. It seems to me that when you're dealing with a grammar and a different sets of grammars, that the only way to accommodate an interface between those grammars is with a metagrammar. And as far as I know, there's only one standard metagrammar in existence right now, and that's SGML. So that's a possibility.
Yes.
Yes, I don't necessarily address the content consistently. I mean, if you look at the grammar of an ontology itself, like, you know, how high-level concepts like contract and jurisdiction and country relate to each other, which is something I sometimes refer to as a grammar, I don't think that's it's really the same question as the physical syntax of SGML or something. So I think they're both important questions.
Anyone else?
Yeah, so we have at a standards level, at a language level, I guess we could also think, I mean, I'm thinking loosely, context and concept or topic map type level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
joining and integrating or interoperating. Mm-hmm. And that certainly can be mapped as a use case. I'll see if I can... Mm.
Yeah, if that's doable, it could be really good, because I think the standardized content that may be presented differently from different communities of practice in a way that could be reused consistently by anybody that needs to reuse it. And if you can do that, that's quite exciting.
Yes, I think at least at the Todd's high level type of use case diagram, I'll attempt one, which combines these two sub-diagrams, namely one for what I agreed with Mike and one what I am agreeing with you now.
Okay. That's really all I had on the agenda for today, guys, and I would love for us to continue this discussion and to try to continue to add to the Open Ontology Repository Use Cases page with our content and our examples. When do you guys think we should meet again on this topic?
First of all, it's Peter Yim here. There are several people on the call today who are actually not OOR team members. So please visit the OOR page or Open Ontology Repository page where the process to participate is documented, and I guess come join us at the alternate Friday meetings.
Yeah, I'm glad you had the URL for this in your report of the last Friday meeting. Otherwise, I wouldn't have made it to this meeting because I didn't have any other notice that it was there. So
right.
We kind of did a cross meeting today.
Uncoordinated in sort of getting the announcements out.
Yeah, so I appreciate your inclusion.